This episode of Therapy Insiders is brought to you by WebPT, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists. Give them a call at 866-221-1870 for a free demo. Check them out on the web at webpt.com/podcast. And if you're interested in business, we talk about plenty of business on this podcast, you definitely want to check out ascend2015.com, the ultimate rehab therapy business summit. It's going to have some of the biggest, best, brightest names in the field. I'll be there. You definitely want to be there. Check it out. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Dr. Gene Chirac abroad from the UpDoc Media family. So today, Ersin Religioso will not be joining us. He is celebrating a wedding anniversary. So happy wedding anniversary, Ersin, and your very, very patient wife. But Joe will be joining us soon, Dr. Joe Palmer. But filling in for Ersin today is our UpDoc Media partner, resident blogger, and super smart, business-minded, Dr. Ben Fung. Ben, how you doing today?
Doing great, Gene. So happy to be here. Very excited about, well, our all-star guest today.
Yes, me too. So we've talked about, Ben, on this show, so many things. I mean, lately, we've been very business-focused, but that's because you and I like talking business, and honestly, that's one of the things that's been very limited in physical therapy and healthcare in general, just applying kind of the entrepreneurial aspects of launching companies, growing ideas into the healthcare world, because we've said it before, and we're going to say it again until it's not true, is that physical therapy in specific is incredibly passive. We follow these mindsets of just hoping things happen, that we want to be really good clinicians, the word of mouth, we let our actions speak louder than words type of mentality, which is great. But no business person in their right mind ever follows that. Every single successful business is about selling the business, selling the value of the business. And I know some of you listening are saying, okay, that's how we sell our value, by being really good clinicians. Yes. Yes, you are, to the person in front of you. But if you want to be bigger, if you want to grow, you need to look at things that are going to be, not what are and what were. So that's something we want to talk about today, right, Ben?
Absolutely.
So do you want to have the honors of introducing our guest? So you're kind of batting from the filling in spot here. You're filling in for the IR.
Very person. Very happy to. It is my pleasure and honor. Richard, and I'm hoping my Mandarin's good enough. Is it Zhao?
Exactly.
All wow, right.
That's a very, very accurate Mandarin. Very.
And
very
depending accurate. On, and it sounds like it's a more of a mainland, vocal background you give. So I have to really respect that Zhao pronunciation.
Yep. Good God, glad I let you.
Which is difficult
him.
For me personally, because my background being an American-born Chinese, that ABC, also with a little bit of a Taiwanese flair, it's a lingual discipline.
But yep.
Mr. Richard, he is perhaps one of the smartest guys I've ever looked up and interacted with. He is a data genius. He knows all about claims, very strong in business strategy, and perhaps a financial genius as well, and not just in normal business, also in equity stakes, also in real estate. And it's just a pleasure to have you here with us, especially with your international experience. So, Richard, welcome.
Well, thank you guys very much. And put a lot of big words on my head. I'm still pressured now.
Absolutely.
Especially on a Thursday night in Minnesota.
That's a hell of an introduction. So, Ben, like Ben said, you're incredibly well-versed in business and insurance and claims. So it's very natural for me to ask you the first question. And it has to be, tell me about what camera you use when you develop black and white pictures.
Okay, yeah. For the 35 millimeter, I used a Topcon. For medium format, for, you know, 6 centimeter by 6 centimeters. Sorry, I used a metric number here.
See, now you just confused everybody. this podcast is really going downhill.
Okay. All right. Topcon is more of the brand that you can see at the ophthalmologist's office. They're still making medical devices or instrument. But used to be in the SLR business. But they're out of it. They're out of it because they cannot compete with Nikon, Canon. But the optic, you know, quality, it just, to me, is really, really good.
So the reason I ask for our listeners that might be thrown off at this point right now is Richard likes photography a lot. It's a hobby of his. And we were talking a little bit before about photography. And I love photography. It's a big, big hobby of mine. And I do it all the time for various businesses. I think photography has so many different avenues of value for business-minded people like myself. Just taking pictures and having that view through a camera really helps with marketing and the visuals of marketing. So just framing shots and just the perspective of taking pictures is, I think, translates really well for advertising, for visual advertising. And like we talked in our previous podcast with Anna Hendricks, visual marketing, visual social media, that's what you have to do. So I think it really, really relates on a lot of levels. But you do film and you do black and white. Why film and not digital?
Well, I would just throw another curveball at your theory about how the photography relates to business.
Here we go.
The reason I do film, the reason I do black and white, to me, photography is a science and art combination. The science is exposure. You know, your chemical, the timing, everything. You have to follow a procedure exactly, you know, to get to the point, to get the result you want. The art is, you know, what's the angle? What's the, you know, how you frame this picture? What do you want to emphasize? What's the story you want to tell? So you have to think both things at the same time. So the black and white thing, just to give it to the simplest possible, just two colors. Without, you know, to me, color could be a distraction if you don't use it right.
Absolutely. So, in black and white, that's that you can really elicit very raw emotions with black and white. I feel like you have to, like you said, focus on that shot because there's not a lot of safety zone with that. You get it or you don't. Whereas with colors, which there's nothing wrong with colors, but there, you have a little bit of a safe area. You can, when in editing, you can do a lot of things to make the picture better than it really is. But what I really want to hit on is your comment on art and science. I mean, Ben, there's got to be a metaphor in there somewhere to medicine and physical therapy in specific in there, right?
Oh, sure. I think it's such a careful blend, you know, where it doesn't matter what discipline in medicine and just the healthcare industry in general. If we focus too much on the science, we lose the art of the human in front of us. And if we don't blend the science in, then quite honestly, we don't know what we're focusing on. So I have a question, Richard.
Yes.
I understand you have quite a bit of personal experience with physical therapists and, you know, and just the healthcare industry at large. And I am just tickled to get your perspective. Where can we do better on that blend of science and art? Particularly, I feel in the science, just as a clinician, I feel like in our culture, we get so focused on perhaps micro measures. You know, little tiny bits of data that may not actually be the big picture. Where do you think we can rebuff and refocus for that big picture?
All right. That's, you know, that's my business mind is talking right now. So because my experience with the payers data before, payers data is about a reimbursement. Every little charge you go to the, you know, insurance company. Then we look at it, you know, and also how I think how the PT practice should look at it in the future. Right now is a big topic is the payment model is changing, right? And the second is, to me, is the market is shifting. The decision, whoever make the purchase decision is shifting because high deductible plans and all the, you know, whatever government programs, they're changing. But for the science piece, to me, healthcare has to establish trust with your patient, with your future patient. So how to establish that trust without a clinical data to show certain treatment result? I don't know, it's more of a macro. You only work on each individual patient, but each individual patient doesn't really, the data doesn't accumulate up to tell a full story about for this diagnosis, how long the episode, what the treatment outcome gonna be. So it's gonna have a hard time to convince the payers. And with the purchase power, with the high deductible plans, a lot of people have the first, you know, $1,000 to $3,000 to spend. They can decide where to spend that. So how to convey that scientific result, use more of a, you know, average person can understand that kind of language to tell them the way I treat this symptoms or this illness, you know, it's do you a benefit. That's a science piece. I think a lot of PT have to communicate out more as a, how to say, not as an individual, more as a group.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the thing is, think about, I just use example, chiral. Chiral in the United States, you know, seems like, you know, when you're talking to, I'm not a physician, when I talk to my friends and the family members, I got, you know, lower back pain. What should I do first? A lot of people recommend chiral. I tried chiral. Not means they're bad, but more of a, you know, at the group, you go, you know, everybody tell you the similar story. Seems like I don't know how to choose which chiral is better than the other. Just like I don't have a knowledge to choose this family doctor was better than the other. So just pick anyone. And they give you a time frame, say, at this time frame, we treat you, Richard, you'll be able to run again without the pain by, you know, doing what? So that give me an expectation. As a patient, I spend my own money. Yes, yeah, that sounds good, like a deal. Then, but after I get into healthcare, I start to realize, the promise at the front end needs some evidence to support. So that's why today's evidence-based medicine really helps. But that's only for the insider, for the providers, for payers, for the networks. You guys know how many episodes to treat what type of, you know, patient, and what's the outcome going to be, the functional, you know, performance after a certain treatment. But this kind of a message never been conveyed to the general public, never been conveyed to the future or current patient. So they don't know. They don't know what PT as a whole, as a, you know, profession, as a way of treating certain disease, illness. They just don't know. Then they, of course, pick up the better one, better to make a simple, quick decision. They go to the other profession.
So when we say that's a great point, we actually talked a little bit about this on our previous podcast. We had a social media expert, a CEO of a social media company, Anna Hendrickson, and I asked her a question. I asked her, when I say physical therapy, what comes to mind? Do you know what her answer was?
Don't. I don't know.
Her answer was, seriously, that was her answer. The first thing that came to mind was,
there is painful.
Exactly. And there's, that was the epitome. That was just the epitomized where we are as a profession. And when I say we, I mean physical therapy in healthcare. And I think it's, like you said, it might be even a bigger issue, not just physical therapy, but entire healthcare spectrum in terms of being, having insurance. Because I think if you take that on a bigger scale and ask a person, just, you know, general population, that's not, like you said, an insider, and we're not just talking therapy insider, but we'll take that, is if you ask somebody, what is your deductible, or what is your copay, or what does that mean? I'm guessing probably 95% of people, their first answer is going to be, and that's a big problem, because people complain about insurance all the time, but they have no idea what they're complaining about.
That's exactly right. That's another experience I had with a payer side. You know, I was in the product development of the payer, so which means I'm the guy, one of the guy you can blame behind the scene, design all the whatever programs.
So it was your fault.
Well, it's your fault that we're going to get better.
That's why I don't tell people on the airplane what's my profession. Either tell them banking or insurance. I'll get a earful of stuff.
So. Please send all angry emails to Richard Zhao at imjustkidding.com.
Yeah, but the thing is, normal people, you know, that's a complicated part of healthcare. When people are looking for healthcare professionals, you know, at a provider, when they look for it, only when some symptoms shows. Most people don't care about they're taking care of themselves very well. So when I get the pain, you know, shoot down my foot, I freak out, what do? I Google, you know. Now is Google much better than 15 years ago is Google. So I can get a lot of stuff. But I get all those informations, what are I going to do? Sometimes information overflow even worse than you don't have information.
Yeah.
Too much noise.
Exactly.
You cannot make a decision. All the information, doesn't matter, it's a data, it's a picture, whatever.
The burden of knowledge.
Yep. You have to help people make a decision. And for patients, especially U.S. patients, that's my personal impression anyway, need a quick decision.
Interesting. So what I'm hearing is, you know, healthcare and all of its disciplines involve, including the back end, you know, the financial end from the payers, insurers, there needs to be a lot more, perhaps the best description is a business process transparency. Consumers need to be have easy access or be given access to how this entire machine works, and more importantly, what their personal expectations will be in that experience. There seems to be a disconnect between, you know, the insiders who know what the brand promise is but are reluctant to share that with the consumers. Is that kind of the big picture problem that we're looking at?
Yep, that's part of the problem. You know, that's exactly the conversation I had at lunchtime with two, you know, insiders. Like, you know, inside as a provider, at the payer side, we all know what's supposed to be done is, you know, for the benefit of a patient. And everybody wins. The payer wins, the provider wins, the patient wins, the 3P model. But so whoever make that purchase decision don't know any of those logic. That's a science piece. You know, as a physical therapist and the business owners and as an insurance company, we all try to figure out, but it doesn't make any logical sense, you know, the quoted logical sense to average person. They don't know anything about those. So how you convey that, you know, the science piece in a very simple way to the patients that this is the best for you financially, physically, mentally, rather than with, you know, pointing finger to each other.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we do that all the time, the bicker and, you know, people just talking for the sake of talking. But you know, sometimes that's better to get conversation started, even if whatever the underlying meaning is. But you're right, educating patients is critical, but by that point they're already patients there or customers, whatever you want to call them, but they're there because, like you said, most people are reactive instead of proactive.
Right.
Most people rely on healthcare when they need it.
Right.
So that's one part of it. One part of it is educating patients. And I want to ask Joe, you obviously being a clinic owner, I'm sure that's a huge part of being an owner, is not just treating patients, but the questions that you get about the billing, because people will feel better, but then they want to know why they were charged this or that. How do you actively help them understand their insurance maybe nip some of the problems in the bud.
Well, Gene, we try to take care of it on the front end, and you know, we do our best to explain their insurance and their benefits to them prior to their care. But it happens all the time. You know, people think they understand or they think something's covered, and it just ends up not being what they expected. But at the end of the day, you know, our question is, you know, did we provide the service that we told you we were going to provide? So, you know, and as long as we provided the service and the care, then, you know, we expect them to uphold their end of the agreement and comply with, you know, their insurance and their portion of that bill. It is a tough discussion, but I think that education during the treatment about why you're doing the things that you're doing clinically helps them to understand the skill and the expertise behind your clinical intervention. I think the more you can bring them on board, then the more likely they are to accept at the end that this is a service that they need to pay for. I wanted to touch on what Richard just said, because it's a good point. You can do all the educating that you want about what we think the best course of action is for that patient. The patient is going to agree that that's the best course of action, no matter how much you educate them. And it's very emotional when people are in pain, when people are hurting. They're making decisions not in a logical manner. They're making decisions because they want to be out of pain, or they want the immediate satisfaction of relief. And so, you know, they want the quick fix. They want the drug, they want the injection, they want the shot. You know, it's just, it's hard to step away from that emotional component to that decision, because, you know, we see that all the time in the clinic. I'm sure you can attest to that as well.
Oh, I'm sure, because I used to design a MSK program, musculoskeleton, and then we're skimming down to, you know, orthopedic program. Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. When I used to do the data, I even saw people bouncing around a zip code to get a narcotics. So, you know, day one in this zip code, a pharmacy bought, you know, narcotics drugs. Then the day three, they go to another place, bought the same drug again and again and again. So the people's behavior, you're right, absolutely right. People looking for quick fix. That's, you know, the desperate.
Yeah, people, nobody likes being in pain, which kind of what it comes down to. So it's providing that entryway to educate them. Again, I think it all comes back full circle, is when somebody thinks pain, we should be one of the first to pop up. Or, you know, honestly, and even chiros, it doesn't matter. I think I would rather somebody get help with a PT or a chiropractor or maybe a physiatrist, but focusing on their body, focusing on movement, focusing on things that they can have control, you know, keeping a locus of control within the patient, not having them rely on medication. Because honestly, how many patients will go, and I've heard the story many a times, you guys can attest to this as well, in a clinic, a patient went to see their physician, and before they were even done telling them what was wrong, they had a script telling them, okay, just take this. That's not fixing anything. That's just, to me, that's exacerbating the issue. That's making the person reliant on medication, but it's just, it keeps that cycle going. You don't fix anything. You just put a little Band-Aid on a surgical cut. It might feel a little bit better, but eventually it's going to open up. So the question to all of you, and we'll start with Richard, is how do we fix that? How do we create a mainstream understanding of healthcare and wellness that patients or people, you know, patients, everybody's the patient at some point. Everybody's a customer. Everyone has aches and pains. How do we change the mindset in a mainstream way?
This episode of Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, as we mentioned, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists. But what makes them the ultimate EMR, I'm sure you're wondering? I decided to ask Anne, a longtime user of WebPT. Here's what she had to say.
I really like the fact that I can send my notes right through WebPT. I can fax them to physicians so that they can see the plan of care and sign it and send it back. My logo is on everything that I send out, and it's all legible. So it really saves me a lot of time in the end because I don't have calls back from either insurance companies or attorneys if it's, you know, a car accident, things like that, asking me to interpret my handwriting on anything.
WebPT, the ultimate EMR for physical therapists, because it's more than just notes. Check them out at 866-221-1870 for a free demo or webpt.com/podcast.
Well, you guys, that's, to me, that's a $1 billion question. You know, you just hit, you know, your nail on the head for you know, all the conservative treatment. The challenge for me, the solution is, the of course, 10 million miles up in the sky solution. Yes, all the PT, chiro have become the entrance of into the system, rather than you rely on the, you know, kind of a referral from primary care physicians, you know, sometimes, you know, neurologists, sometimes orthopedic surgeons. That's more of an after surgery kind of deal. So how the question is, this exactly the discussion I had at lunchtime. So how PT or chiro become an entry point for those kind of, say, just use lower back pain, because lower back pain, that, you know, patient enter into the system so widespread out, you know, there's no consensus of treating such, you know, condition. And a certain portion going to end up expensive surgery, certainly going to end up with, you know, injection, like $2,000 a pop. Somebody end up, you know, MRI, CT, which it costs about $1,000 each time. So, but there's a, you know, a more conservative approach actually really benefit, as you said, really, really, it's a treatment rather than covered up with drugs. But feeling better, not necessarily is better for the patient. Somehow, I'm thinking, hopefully, there's some kind of a there's some kind of a help or aid for patients to make a decision that way, versus then just by feeling. But sometimes it's difficult to fight the feeling. Hopefully, that's a payer side. They try to reduce the number of MRI, you know, or CT used, reduce the number of how to say, they got a prior, they put a prior osteotomy injection on the surgery. They try to reduce that utilization. Hopefully that helps. But
it, comes, it still comes back to just common knowledge or perception of common knowledge, which I think is even worse, because people rely on information. You don't know what you don't know. So you make connections, right, based on what you think is right. So a person that all of a sudden feels tightness in their hamstring, feels like they should stretch their hamstring because logic dictates that. If something feels tight, then you should stretch it. You don't think about, oh, this might be coming from a lumbar radiculopathy causing overactivation of your hamstring. People don't know that. So how, Ben, how do we connect to mainstream audiences? How do we educate on a bigger level? Because by the time we're educating patients, they're there. They are a very willing audience because they're hurting. How do we get them before that?
Well, my million, you know, million miles up in the sky thoughts runs to culture. You know, I was just thinking, you know, as Richard was speaking, you know, we have this problem, you know, in the United States where we don't know who the right provider is. We don't know when to go see them. We don't know how much it should cost, and we have no idea what the process should look like, how long it should take, and how quickly I should feel better. In the same vein, I'm thinking back to some of my relatives in Taiwan, where they have too much access to any provider they want to go to, but they know it. They know where they need to be and who they need to go to for the right type of treatments, for the right type of drugs, right type of scripts, etc. If it's a cultural issue, then I think we need to start with where people learn, with kids. I have very strong memories in, I think it's preschool of some sort, where we brush our teeth. We have a we have like a time where we brush our teeth right after lunch, all the kids together, because you don't want to have cavities. You have to brush your teeth. And I believe there's an opportunity there in our education systems to raise that kind of culture, so that they do know where things are found, where the right provider is, what the right time is. Now, for the time being, I think it's kind of on us as clinicians to shift our focus. I feel that clinicians are just so introspective. We're so good at looking at ourselves, looking at our own credentials, our own methodologies and our techniques. I think we need to spend a lot more of our resources and our time in that public, almost a PSA type approach. I can't remember the last time I heard a physical therapy advertisement on the radio. Can any of you guys?
No.
I can't. I hear chiropractic every once in a while, but that's about as far as it gets. And I'm wondering if we simply need to just reboot some of those channels. And it's not so much of getting the word out there as it is increasing share of mind. Word is great, but words can float away. But the share of mind process, we need to start somewhere with a brand image, for physical therapy, perhaps. And then that promise, how quickly you as the consumer will experience our services and get better. Those are just kind of my, conceptual thoughts at the moment.
And with the ads, when the ads do play, very rarely, like you said, but when they do play, they are usually, from my experience, from hearing them, they further perpetuate falsehoods. So what I hear are things that make me kind of cringe during these ads. Not things that we should be saying. More, kind of feeding into what people, kind of what we talked about, the perceptions that people have of common knowledge. If this is tight, come in, we'll stretch it, you'll feel better. We'll use this laser, or we'll do things that are maybe not evidence-based necessarily, but just are just terrible treatments that you would never want to recommend as a good clinician. So it's being very careful with those ads and really selling patients and people on education, but still selling. Yes, I know they're ads, they're expensive, and you want to sell yourself and the value of yourself and your business. Nothing wrong with that. Absolutely, you're going to be spending money. But there's really good ways of doing it as well. And so those are things to think about. What do you think, Joe?
I think that it is about trying to gain a little bit of a more hold in market share. I agree with Ben there a little bit, but really we need to, and I've said this before, become the provider of choice. I really like what Richard said with the entry into the system. I think that does put conservative thought first. And then if we're focused on doing everything we can to avoid the next step, I mean, that's how you make a decision. You start with the easiest thing that you can do, and then you continue to work up to what's more challenging or what's harder. But at this point in time, we kind of do it backwards in medicine. You go to the top of the pyramid and you work your way down, kind of. So I think that That's a good idea. I don't see it happening, but I think that it's certainly something that could change the way medicine works. I've had some experience with case managers and with these new hospital networks that are trying to help high risk patients make better decisions and in that keep them out of requiring more expensive care. It's kind of part of the ACO model, but basically, you know, I think that's a step in the right direction. As long as those people who are advising the patients are making decisions in a non-biased way, you know, if they're truly patient advocates, then I think that is a way to give some information to patients and have them develop a relationship with these advocates in order to help navigate them through the system. And I think that more insurance companies will start to do that especially with their high risk populations.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, ACO, that's could be a whole separate discussion and probably will be at some point in the near future. All right, Richard, so let's to kind of finish things up, we talked a lot about, covered a lot of topics, the future, which is always a popular topic because we always hope to get better and to change. We know medicine is incredibly slow, but we have a lot of physical therapy students, #DBT students, shout out, that listen, and they're very, very active, and they're very eager, and they're very willing for change, which is great. It's great to see that they're not afraid to make new changes or new directional guidance for people, for us that have been in the profession for years. So if you had to give advice, if you had to suggest for the students or even new grads of what to do based on data-driven, based on entrepreneurial vision, what would you say to them as they're starting their clinical work and for change?
Well, the change I foresee, you know, all the market shifting, I would say first thing is to learn some marketing skills, you know, because it doesn't matter how good your physician or therapist, you have to be able to sell your value to the patient, to the market you want to, you know, to address. So, and the second thing is to learn something about, you know, about data, about clinical data, you know, because eventually evidence-based medicine, that's, you know, payer side, going to be very emphasized on that. And if it be your practice owner, you want to be join a network and you want to own a network, that's part of your daily language right now. And the third thing is become advocates for you know, conservative treatment, and to tell the patient, to communicate to the patient, to just you know, volunteer 10 minutes of your time on Twitter, on Facebook, tell one thing about what this profession can do for the benefit of patients. So this really need a lot of times, a lot of people's efforts, little efforts all accumulated together to make some major changes.
That's great advice. And we've been pushing that. I mean, sell your value. We can get that tattooed on Ben's forehead at this point. We say it so often. Plus, Ben, you've always wanted a tattoo on your forehead, right? Mike Tyson-esque. Except you want cheek. You can go forehead.
If you mention it, we'll have to run that by my wife, but, you know, maybe.
She'll be all right with it. She'll be okay.
I'll give it a 51% yes.
We'll make it artistic letters. It'll be good. It'll be good. But yeah, we talk about that all the time. And we have groups that really emphasize and really help with educating the populations. Get PT First or at Get PT First on Twitter. They do a great job of really pushing the PT profession in the right way. They try to really show the value of the profession. So shout out to those guys and gals. So Ben, what do you think? What if you had to give advice, and we communicate with DPT students all the time, especially on the some recent blog posts on updocmedia.com. If you had to give them advice, what would you say? Because you do have to give them advice because I'm asking you.
Sure. I mean, if you're forcing me, I guess I'll have to give them something.
It's either that or the tattoo in your forehead.
Well, no, you sold that. I agree. I definitely want to, you know, resonate with, you know, Richard, you know, learn marketing, learn business. I think the biggest deficit, black hole we have in the physical therapy education process is definitely in, in both the front end and back end of business, in how we fit into that healthcare supply chain, and perhaps more importantly, how we need to exist in the ecosystem of healthcare economics. You know, I think, you know, to the DPT students and the fresh PTs out there, you know, spend a little extra time, you know, whatever blogs that you can Google or come across, or just discussions that you can have on social media, learn about the business behaviors that practically govern how you make a living. And from there, you're going to find a lot of interesting truths of where the consumer perspective is, and where the payer perspective is, and where your employer's perspective is, you know, and why there's so much frustration. That way you can add yourself to the population of professionals that are part of that solution, you know, rather than just, you know, being, you know, sitting in the corner being, man, I wish that, you know, payment wouldn't change like this, and, you know, our reimbursement rates, sorry, Jerry Durham.
$5.
You know, they're not going down, and, you know, all these things and complaints that we have, they become a little bit moot when you take a look at, you know, that true big picture of the business of behaviors in the human experience in healthcare. You just got to go there and honestly make yourself uncomfortable. You know, go to some timeshare pitch and pick up some sales tips and mark down every single time you feel guilty that you don't want to buy, because that's the kind of skills you need to pick up, and maybe not leverage them that way, but learn how to be able to communicate that value in what you have learned and what you do and what you bring to the table for each individual consumer and just the whole consumer base at large. Get into business. Learn whatever you can.
Good advice. So pretty much stop bitching and actually do something. I like it. What about you, Joe? You've obviously you've kind of groomed some students. You've given advice. You have one of our previous guests, Brooke McIntosh, working at your clinic now. Shout out. So, you know, what have you told Brooke and other students that have come through? What would you recommend?
I recommend that they believe in the product that they're providing, and that they understand what they are charging for their services, and that they make themselves comfortable with the fact that what they're charging is appropriate for the services that they're providing. So and make sure that because once you're comfortable with what you're doing, and the service that you provide, if you honestly believe that it's the best thing for the patient, and that you're giving more in value than you're asking for in payment, then you're okay. You can sell that proposition. If you don't feel like you're doing the patient a service, if you don't feel like you're providing them value, then anything that you charge them is going to look too expensive to you.
And it comes across that way. I mean, when you don't really believe in your value, people feel that. That comes across very, very easily. So you really do. You're right. You're absolutely right. You have to believe what you're providing. All right. Well, wow. That's so much information. I think that's very useful, very actionable, and I think it hopefully motivating for those that are listening to take charge, to really want to push forward and not just sit back and think, oh yeah, they're doing that or they're doing that. Everybody needs to do it. Doesn't matter if you have one clinic, if you're an employee, if you have two Twitter followers. I hear that all the time. Well, I don't really don't want to talk about it because I only have three followers, and it doesn't matter. Just join the conversation. Who cares how many followers you have, if you have any followers? We're all interested in everybody's opinions, because the more people that get involved, the better it is for everyone. So get involved. Get somebody involved. If you're listening to the show, if you interact with us on Twitter, grab somebody. If you're a student, you have 50, 60 people in class, get them on. Shove their iPhone in their face. Say, download Twitter. Get a handle. Get an avatar. Get going. Then make fun of their avatar because they don't know what they picked. But doesn't matter. It'll be fun. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us. For our listeners, if they want to get a hold of you or find more stuff, is there a blog or Twitter? Where can they find you?
Twitter probably the best way. It's at Richard Zhao. I can spell Z-H-A-O. That's where I am.
Simple enough. All right, so you can find Richard on Twitter. I'm sure we can talk, like most of our guests, with Richard for a long, long, long time, but I'm guessing you probably don't want to listen to us for a long, long, long time. But again, thank you for listening. Thanks, Ben, for filling in so very well for Urson.
My pleasure.
Joe, thanks for rushing in from the clinic.
Always a pleasure.
No speeding tickets, I hope?
None today.
Good for you. Good for you. So as always, thank you all for listening. Again, the reviews on iTunes have been fantastic. So please leave us some more. Help us keep up on the charts if more people can hear this show, which helps us out a ton. For all of you visiting updocmedia.com, Ben's been putting out some awesome blogs covering a whole lot of topics, from interviews to salaries, that you should check out. So check out updocmedia.com. And speaking of Ben, I want to introduce a new program that Ben and I will mostly be spearheading. And we're calling it Business Renovation. And what that's going to be is a three-day kind of intensive where Ben and I actually fly out to your business and we take a look. But Ben's going to cover all the financials. Ben is, in case you don't know, is an MBA and a PT. Ben will look at all your financials and look at projections, see what things we can clear up. I'll look at all your front-end stuff and the marketing, the selling, the social media stuff. We'll come together, and in 3 days, we'll give you a renovation plan. It's kind of like one of those TV shows where the chef comes in and starts cussing at everybody and throws things and breaks things. So we might not break things. We'll probably cuss and maybe scream at you a little bit, but all critically and in a good way. Right, Ben?
Well, I mean, we'll be nice about it.
It'll
but
be
more
constructive.
Importantly,
it'll be constructive.
But more importantly, you're going to get all the solutions you need, from the questions you may not actually know are lingering, all the missed opportunities, just from a third person's perspective. We're going to dig all those out for you.
We're digging them up, and we're going to tweak them and fix them and really optimize your business for you. So if you're interested in that, we're taking a very limited amount of people to start out with, because we really don't like to travel a lot. So if you're interested, email me at Gene, G-E-N-E, at updocmedia.com. And we'll kind of go through the businesses that we get, and we'll let you know if we can make it work for you or not. So again, if you're interested in the business renovation, let me know, Gene at updocmedia.com. And again, Richard, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you guys next time.